The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. And hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Welcome, everyone. Today we've celebrated our monthly memorial for Reverend Master Jiyu, and it seems appropriate to contemplate some of her teachings and virtues in particular. And this is a traditional practice in Buddhist monasteries of our tradition, the Soto Zen Serene Reflection Meditation tradition, to take time each month to return to gratitude for the Dharma that has been passed on to us by a venerable elder or previous abbot or abbess in our lineage, in this case our first and founding abbess and master of many of the senior monks here at the Abbey. And I had the good fortune last month to spend a couple of weeks at one of our monastery's hermitages, our forest hermitage, together with Reverend Master Kodo. And as you've been discovering perhaps this weekend, we have a saying that we retreat in order to advance. It might even come from military practice, for all I know, but it's true. And it is a good strategy to employ. We all have to have times of retreat, so we're very glad to have seen so many of you here this weekend. And just as you all very much feel the need to have a retreat from time to time, the monks do as well. We're in the same position and need these retreats, which we often take at our hermitages or here, to help us deepen our practice. And for me, the hermitage retreats are always, they offer a space, they open a space to let go of worry and, of course, busyness, and to find a deeper quiet, ease, stillness in the midst of conditions, and thus allowing gratitude and joy to arise, joy in the practice. And this is really very important. So it's a little bit different from maybe a little bit more restful retreat for us than when we might have an intensive meditation retreat here in the monastery, although in some people's minds, meditation is rest as well. So that is always, always helpful. Sometimes during the course of our busy lives, daily lives, we can forget about gratitude. It can become buried. Reverend Master Jiyu taught that gratitude is the fifth of the wisdoms. You know, Dogen's teaching on the four wisdoms, the other four being charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. She said that gratitude is a particular characteristic of Soto Zen training and the main sign of enlightenment, of awakening. So that's a pretty big statement. So I've always taken that to heart. So it's important to create space in our schedules and in our minds and hearts for gratitude to come to the surface. And this allows us to think and act with greater wisdom as Buddhism sees wisdom. It doesn't mean that we necessarily always feel grateful. And I think that's an important point that has been for me. But to allow the mind to turn towards gratitude. But I'll tell you here from this quote of Reverend Master Jiyu's commentary on Great Master Dogen's Shushogi, you'll get a bit of a flavor of what we're talking about, also as gratitude on a deeper level. As you may have read in the Shushogi, the final chapter is called The Life of, or Putting the Teachings into Practice and Showing Gratitude, I think. And in Roar of the Tigress, Volume 1, Reverend Master has a chapter here on the life of gratitude. So she says, and now we've been speaking of gratitude all along as an aspect of other things, but now I want to concentrate on it by itself. For gratitude is the main sign of awakening. Gratitude for the teaching, for the eternal, for the Buddha, for everything which shows us the eternal, and for that which comes from the eternal, the Buddha nature or the spark of the eternal, whichever you like to call it. So when I'm on a retreat at a hermitage, I find myself making it a practice in particular to look for those sparks and to settle into those spaces where I see and experience those sparks. We can do this anywhere in our daily lives. Of course, we don't have to be in a special place. In one sense, all places are the same. And being human, we need to have special places also. Dogen says, the Buddha nature should be thus simply awakened in all living things within this world, for their desire to be born herein has been fulfilled. As this is so, why should they not be grateful to Shakyamuni Buddha? If the truth had not spread throughout the entire world, it would have been impossible for us to have found it, even should we have been willing to give our very lives for it. We should think deeply upon this. How fortunate have we been to be born now when it is possible to see the truth? And how fortunate to come together for a retreat, and even today to talk about the Dharma, to express gratitude, to honor our ancestors. So in terms of the gratitude for the ancestors and the teachers, I'd like to weave a little bit of my reflections on Buddhist training from some past hermitage retreats, including this last one, and together with gratitude for our Master Jiyu's generous teachings. One thing that always comes to my mind when I'm at a hermitage, and often it's, you know, one is walking by oneself or with just another person, and it's very quiet out there except for all the natural sounds, and of course one appreciates nature. But when one sees more deeply into nature, there are many, many lessons of the Dharma. I find that walking the forest trails, we have a number of forest trails there. One of them is labeled the red trail, and the other is a yellow trail and pink trail. They have little markings on the trees to guide us. Yeah, they're beautiful walks. Sometimes you're walking very steeply up or downhill. Sometimes the path is very narrow. You've really got to be mindful of your step. Sometimes it opens up wide and you can see. You get a much wider view of the path. Yeah? And what I'm trying to communicate, apart from gratitude, is also a very important aspect of Reverend Master Jiyu's teaching in with regards to sanctifying the mundane. I think you've heard that expression, meaning to allow the teaching that naturally arises in your training in various situations to arise, to see, not to be constantly intellectually looking for spiritual metaphors, but rather on a gut level to allow the Dharma to arise as you are in retreat, as you're doing things, and that will trickle into your daily life and you'll catch these little sparks more frequently. Sometimes we can only see a short stretch ahead of ourselves on the path, on the trail. You don't know what's coming around the corner. It could be a bear or if it's out at this particular hermitage. So we carry a little bell on a staff to alert the wild animals, and they are very good about honoring that and don't bother us, or I haven't so far. And sometimes you can see a great distance. I know I have this tendency when I'm on a trail to always want to see what's around the next corner or what's just over the next hill, you know. And it's very exciting sometimes, and it's fun. It's really fun. And I find I have to really watch my enthusiasm as well, because if I get too enthusiastic, I start becoming unmindful, and have often noticed myself with great enthusiasm going off down the wrong fork of the trail, and suddenly I'm going steeply down a ravine and I'm thinking, oh. That happened to me more frequently in my early hermitage days. I don't think I can go any further here. Oh, obviously, I'm off the path. Yeah, and so one sort of makes one's way back, and one looks for, hopefully not too frantically, another one of those colored circles somewhere on a tree, which is when you do find them, you think, oh, thank you for those who made this trail and all who have kept it up. For me, it's a wonderful analogy to walking the path of Buddhist training mindfully, feeling gratitude for those who have pointed the way and those who continue to point the way. Without those Dharma markers, the precepts, if you like, you know, we would frequently get quite lost, and certainly we have been. Yeah, and it's my choice as to whether I take note of them. I have noticed one of the nice benefits of maybe getting older and older in training as well is that I catch my unmindful enthusiasm more quickly. So I don't go quite as far down the ravine as I used to, fortunately. But Reverend Master Kodo and I were talking about the fact that there's no way that you can avoid sometimes straying off the path a bit. You know, you can't train yourself without being willing to make a little bit of a mistake. So there is that aspect of training also that comes becomes apparent to me on these trails, that of taking chances. You've got to take a chance. You've got to be, you know, there's a balance between being vigorous and being mindful. Yeah. So unless you use those muscles, if you like, you know, unless you allow some trial and error in your life as you're walking down the path, you don't actually learn from your direct experience. And this is a very, very important aspect of training. You can know for yourself when you're on the path. Yeah. Or sometimes you know once when you stray off the path. That's a good way to find out too. The point is, we have to know for ourselves before the penny drops, before it really registers what needs to be done, what works, how these precepts work, what the Dharma is pointing at. Yeah. So it was just an interesting observation. We have these nice little Dharma discussions now and then, and when we're at a hermitage, Reverend Master Kodo and I, and that was one of them. And realizing, you know, the significance of finding out for yourself. Yeah. And that, also the gratitude to those who point the way. Now, in a way, we can see that all around us in our daily lives. You know, how often do we feel grateful for those freeway signs going, you know, telling us which exit's coming up, and that there's a windstorm coming up, or the street signs that tell us when we can cross safely. Just think of the myriad things that point the way for us, both physically and actually spiritually, that allow us to continue to go on in our training. And it's good to just allow the mind to turn in that direction. It's a deliberate choice. It doesn't mean we don't see the problems that exist in our world and in our lives. It doesn't mean we gloss over them and are always happy. But there's a choice involved in leaning towards gratitude, in reflecting on what actually works and how we're benefiting from it. At least I find this to be a really important practice. There was years ago when I was living in Canada, they were going through an election and they were going through a process of trying to find what the Canadian identity was, you know, and there was a lot of, they have some good comedians up there, so they were making great, having a fun time with this whole thing. And one comedian came up with a slogan that I still remember, actually very good for my training. Canada is a problem looking for a solution. I mean, I'm sorry, it's the other way around. Canada is a solution, forgive me. Looking for a problem. Sometimes it's the other way up. But Canada is a solution looking for a problem. And I thought that was very insightful. Whether Canada is still that way, I don't know. Canada has its problems. But how often do we find ourselves with things being okay, but there's that part of us that's looking for, it's not quite satisfied. You know, there's got to be something to complain about, yeah? Or if there is something that's not quite right, how about, you know, looking more towards the solution than going round and round and round on what the problem is, yeah? So maybe that's very obvious to most people, but I find that to be a helpful aspect of this teaching on gratitude. You know, what is actually working and how can we keep that going and how can we expand that? Yeah. Well, this is just one example of many little contemplations that I've had at hermitages. Another one was when I was out in April at this forest hermitage. We have a lovely little pond there with some miniature koi and goldfish. And I always love to visit with them. We all do, and we feed them once a day when it's warm enough in the pond. They seem to do pretty well. There's about 62 of them right now. I counted them. And I can't count the little black ones very well. You have to have the light on them to see them. But they're sweet. And just as many newts. But anyway, they're fun to be with. They're so sweet. And they come up, of course, with their mouths open and want to be fed. And they're very aware of you when you come around the pond. This is in a kind of wilderness area, so it's remarkable that it's kept going. And, of course, when I was out there in April, there were some warm spells. And lo and behold, when the sun comes out, the snakes come out, the garden snakes. Fortunately, there aren't, right around the pond at least, no poisonous snakes. This April, there happened to be a lot of snakes. I don't know what they're all called, but, you know, black and yellow striped ones and brown and gray ones and, you know, big snakes. And I had seen these little baby fish, obviously, you know, one of the little fish nurseries had just hatched, and I saw this little collection of teeny little things in a shallow part of the pond, and I was admiring them and taking great joy and delight in them. And of course, I suddenly saw this snake go right into the water after them, and I was quite annoyed. And I managed to, with my cane, not hurt the snake, but lift it up out of the water and move it. And then I tracked it for quite a while as it was going across the pond. And I have to say, as I was sitting there, my annoyance started to melt a bit because I had to appreciate how incredibly still the snake was able to sit. It was unbelievable. It was very, very still, just sitting there for about 15 minutes on some lily pads without any movement. And I thought, I've got to admire that, you know. And then I thought, look at this. Isn't this an interesting thing? You know, you get a chance to really see what your mind is up to when you're by yourself a lot. And that's helpful sometimes to have these periods on your own. And not to be afraid of that, just to be willing to explore what your mind is doing. So there my mind was in this sort of somewhat blissful, peaceful wilderness nature, little fishies, everything's wonderful, peace, quiet spot. And suddenly I'm having to deal with these killers, snakes. And I'm watching my feelings about that, and I'm thinking, boy, that's quite a jump, just like that, you know, into annoyance. And then suddenly, you know, I was in some turmoil inwardly. At least I was able to observe that, you know, very clearly at that point. And I thought, this just won't do. I have to resolve this, you know. So I had to sit there and meditate with it. Well, the snakes helped me resolve it because suddenly I looked to the side and I saw a little baby snake. I mean, this big. It was so cute. I thought, oh, God, they've got babies too, you know. They take care of their young with tenderness and, you know, and nurturing. And I thought, oh, gosh, now that's a real lesson for life, isn't it? You know, all beings are indeed at heart Buddha. And it really kind of opened something up for me in terms of how we deal with conflict, you know, in our world, actually, and within ourselves. Snakes have a right to live as much as the fish, and they, you know, they're little killers. I'm sure the fish, you know, do certain things in, but we don't notice. And what's that about? Reminded me of a Zen story. You've probably read the story of the Zen master and the disciple are out in the woods down by the river somewhere and washing it. I think they see, forgive me if I get the story wrong, but basically, hopefully I get the teaching of it right. There was a snake appeared. They were enjoying a frog in the water, and a snake appeared and swallowed the frog. And the disciple looks at the master and, you know, sort of the same similar feeling to what I had. You know, why does that happen? What, you know? And the master says, for your benefit. Yeah. And I thought, okay, so got to take this in, you know. And that's very, very helpful. What do we do in our world when we see apparent evil, yeah, when beings are harming each other? Yeah, so there's a lesson, and I think you understand what I'm pointing to. How do we put into action this teaching of all beings are at heart Buddha? Well, I still track the snake, I have to say. I track the snake, and I tried to encourage it to go away, and then other snakes came, and every day I went out there, and I tromped around. I decided just to make some noise in the leaves to discourage them from getting close to the fish while I was feeding them, at least while they were vulnerable. But I realized that I couldn't completely prevent the loss of some fish and the violence. Yeah, so I had to sit and accept that. And out of that came gratitude and compassion, you know, the waters of compassion. Yeah. So, lessons about how to deal with conflict. I'll let you work that one out. But it reminds me, it takes me to the poem. Out at the Compassionate Forgotten Hermitage, we have a shrine there, a Kanzeon shrine near the Fugen, near the brook. And there is a poem on the wall of that that goes as follows. And it's in this pretty wild forest of alder and cedar and fir and madrones and so on. A lot of lichen and moss and very wet, and these beautiful creeks running into, you know, eventually flowing into the Smith River, I guess. Here's the poem. The sound of the wind through the pine trees is as the sound of the rushing waters. In the shrine of clear water, how refreshed will the heart be that is filled with the grace of this clear water. So as you're sitting there by the water, this is a contemplation for those that go out there. And we're talking about the water of the Spirit as well. But I'm going to come back to that, because when we really do touch the gratitude in our hearts, it opens the door to the water of the Spirit flowing. It cleanses the conflict. It cleanses the distress, the dis-ease. It resolves it. Well, one other little thing I'll mention. There have been many contemplations, of course, but this is one that I enjoyed as well. Some time back when I was at the same hermitage on a different trail, and noticing a lot of mushrooms, especially in the springtime, because I'm often there in the springtime. Wild mushrooms. We don't eat them. We're kind of careful about that. But later I was reading about mushrooms, and I was fascinated. Apparently, there's this massive network of mushrooms underground, the entire forest. I mean, not just little patches of it, but everywhere. The entire forest is dependent on this network of fungi, if you can believe it. I didn't realize the extent of that. And it has an important job. The network of mushrooms break down all the forest detritus and, create this soil that allows the trees and shrubs and herbs and flowers to grow. And I thought, wow, now that took me to an appreciation and gratitude for this, the network of support for our lives and our training. Think about that. Think about what it is that not only helps us as monastics here, the incredible support that we have for our monastery, for the retreats that we do, all the physical support, the Dharma protectors, all the kindness that makes the growth of our training possible, and for each and every one of you here in your own way. If you reflect on that, I'm sure you can come up with a massive network of support, yeah? Again, something to think about. It even, to me, I find it helpful sometimes to reflect on just some of the common mundane things that we take for granted in our lives. the post office to me is amazing. I mean, you know, you put a stamp on a piece of paper and you give it to somebody, and it travels through all these different places to a completely different place in the world, and it gets there most of the time, you know. In the 1970s, I was traveling through Spain, and I took a bunch of photographs and sent them to friends or relatives, and they never made it. And I thought, oh, that's a shame. Most everything else I sent did. But nowadays, that rarely happens, at least to me. And what does that tell us? There's amazing cooperation along the way there, you know, people and trust involved in that, people having respect and trust for this private piece of paper. No doubt they have their problems sometimes, yeah? And maybe we'll eventually develop that sort of ethic with with email, and, you know, it's too easy to hack into those things, isn't it? But, or, you know, Reverend Master Kodo and I were reflecting on driving on the road, or I was thinking, you know, there you are driving on the freeway, and you're in a stream of, traffic going 60 miles an hour or more, and, you know, everybody has to be doing their job for that to work, yeah? You know, everybody's got to be paying attention. Yes, there are accidents occasionally, but more often than not, all these beings on this road, and not only all that's gone into creating the road and so on, but there's a lot of mindfulness, there's a lot of attention, there's a lot of care. It's quite an interesting network of cooperation and trust and faith. And, you know, Master G used to say, you know, without, of course, one of the laws of the universe, without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. We don't often see that, but when we think of our modern world, there are a lot of things in our world that have come or have been created out of trust and respect. Yeah, many of the laws that we have and so on. These are beginnings of precepts, all these things. So again, just turning the mind to gratitude for all of these things seems an important teaching for me right now. Maybe for all of us somewhat, with the elections coming up and all the opinions and views and judgments that go around and things that we don't like and we, you know, that we think we need to fix. Perhaps making a little space for gratitude to arise is helpful at this time and can help us to discern better, you know, allow that wisdom of gratitude to navigate, help us navigate these somewhat unsettled times. I'll just continue a little bit with this chapter here of Reverend Master Jiyu's commentary on Great Master Dogen's Shoshogi. Dogen says, "You need no further teachings than the above in order to show gratitude, and you must show it truly in the only real way in your daily life. Our daily life should be spent constantly in selfless activity with no waste of time whatsoever." That has always seemed a very tall order to me. Because I waste a lot of time. But I thought about this. What's wasting time? Wasting time isn't so much about time for me. Maybe it is sometimes. But it's about, you know, judgments and the like. Do we have to really spend so much time with, you know, and give so much time and space to some of that stuff that comes up in the mind? I've heard it said that judgment is probably the worst killer of gratitude. Judgment in the sense of turning away from something, turning away from the Buddha nature in ourselves or in others, and in particular for ourselves. Yeah? So if we learn not to judge ourselves, we can be grateful for even for those difficult times and even for our faults. Selfless activity, you know, just bringing the mind back to what you're doing, not trying to carry yourself around. So Reverend Master Jiyu, anyway, says this means that, and I know it for a fact myself, once you find this place, this third position, the eternal, the gratitude flows out like a river. A lot of people call it the water of the spirit or the water of the eternal. Or as you see in some statues, Kanzan pouring the water of compassion out. It's also the water of gratitude. From this third position, it's just not possible to think of doing something contrary to the precepts, because you can never imagine how you'd be crazy enough not to be in this wonderful state. But you can't meditate in order to get that, in quotes. You meditate for the sake of meditating, because you long to be one with the eternal, because you're not satisfied with you as you are right now, not to get the benefits. So I'm going to leave you with that, I think, today. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.